Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Following through with themes, my friends. Following through with themes. We have a theme here today. And we were talking yesterday about the dog ate the homework. The very famous dog who eats all the homework. Meaning excuses that people make when they don't come back for seconds. You know, hey, would you like another dish of food? No, thank you. I'm full. Or, no, I'm trying to save myself for another thing. Well, reason that people make excuses is what we talked about yesterday. We kind of pushed that. And if you didn't hear that show and you're somebody who deals with having to try to figure out why people don't come back to you a second time, either in social relationships, you could always get that by listening to yesterday's program on our archives. But today we're going to talk about the other side of it, which is what you feel when people don't do it. Yep. Here's a word for you, resensitivity. Well, it's rejection sensitivity, right? Resensitivity, rejection sensitivity. Now, what that means is like rejection is a fundamental law of the universe, you know? It's like everybody hurts in ways big and small. And we're all rejected every day of our lives. Of course, we can't possibly like everyone who likes us, and we can't join every group that would like to have us as a member, so we constantly let other people down. People ask you for something, you say no. It's the way the social universe operates, and yet when it happens to us, we tend to take it personally, and some of us take it more personally than others. Very often, so personally that a person sinks into a deep depression. What's that all about? If you were to track the daily happenings of people and their moods, and when their moods get flattened, you're likely to find rejection is at the core of almost every bad move. A very high percentage of negative events are related to the feeling that someone else doesn't value a relationship as much as you do. Or someone else doesn't value you as much as you would want them to value you. Duke University Mark Leary said, "There are sore feelings that accompany such things as, why did my coworker brush me off at that meeting? Or my husband is watching TV when he could be paying attention to me." Feels like a rejection to some people. Why do some people more than other people? That's what we're going to try to cover today, and that's our show today. The program is going to be about rejection sensitivity. You feel like one of those? The drive to bond, as we said yesterday, lies deep in our DNA. Disappointment when we fail to connect is virtually guaranteed. I mean, the ultimate rejection is the departure of a loved one. You know, if you love somebody and they leave you, they die, another oi, maybe a double oi. It's a big thing. It's among the most stressful of all experiences. For some people, the tiniest of slights can rile the emotions and send our self-esteem into a tailspin. In part, self-esteem reflects who we are intrinsically, but it's also a barometer of our standing with others, you know, where we stand with other people. So this guy Leary found that social self-esteem rises with any inkling of acceptance. Would you like to join me for lunch? You know, raises your self-esteem and plummets with any cutdowns. You know, whereas, for example, if somebody says to you, yes, I like you as a friend. You know, not what I was hoping for. It's an internal gauge that we have to sensitivity to rejection, and it's independently programmed. So when you feel bad, you tend to feel bad about yourself. But there is another element to it, you see. Nature designed us to be vigilant about potential rejection. Because most of our history was dependent on small groups of people, and we had to gather, and like I said yesterday, we had to be a group, you know. Humans, we don't have the weapons. We have our mind, we have our vocabulary, and we have the gathering. We're a gang, you know. But if you get kicked out of your gaggle, right, if you're suddenly gaggleless, you're in danger of not being able to survive. So nature builds in a sensitivity to being kicked out, a sensitivity to rejection. So rejection is not just a psychological concept. It's a DNA concept. It's a genetic concept. It's the survival of the species is based on limited rejection. Now, however, some people have more jittery rejection detection radar than other people do. You know, if you have one and somebody gives you an empty threat, like, you know, creating needless anxiety and groundless jealousy, like jealousy, in effect, is a form of rejection fear, rejection sensitivity. If you're jealous, you're afraid the guy's going to leave you for somebody else. You're afraid, you know, that, hey, don't you go walking by here, mister, wiggling that beautiful thing that my girlfriend might want to look at. Don't you dare do that. I'm afraid she may turn me down. I'm afraid she may choose you over me. Again, built in. Built in, and it's part of your system. It's part of, it's almost a natural thing. At the high end of the rejection sensitivity scale, people pay a very steep price for just wanting to belong. In order to belong to something, they're so afraid of rejection that they turn themselves into doormats. How many people do you know that are very nice and very welcome because they are doormats, because they just will do anything you say and be there for anything you want? And right, their fear of rejection is so strong that they are just giving, giving, giving all the time. It's the way they secure their position. But it works. It works in nature. It works in the species. There are people who will do that. There are a number of reasons why rejection sensitivity is becoming more pervasive, which it is. Number one, there's major depression. Major depression, it's a condition tightly linked to rejection sensitivity. It's been on the rise almost in almost all age groups over the last 20 years. And even though we have Prozac and things like that, what seems to happen is we seem to dull the depression, but the sensitivity still stays. But it seems that something is happening to people where people are feeling more and more selective. We don't know what it is. It could be that the parents and educators overprotect and overpraise the children. You know what we had in the book, The Nation of Wimps, when we talked about that? And that those children are now becoming adults. The actions backfire because they breed a preoccupation with evaluation by others. If your child comes running to you with a painting and says, "What do you think, Mommy?" and you say, "It's great," that child's belief in themselves is based on your praise. As we develop a society that is more sensitivity to evaluation by others, we're going to develop a society of people more sensitive to rejection. You know, I mean, I'm sure 100 years ago, people were not as sensitive to rejection as they are now. Nowadays, people get rejected by their pets. You know, if your cat doesn't feel like playing with you, oh, you feel bad, what's the matter? You know what I mean? It's like you get rejected by your goldfish. You know, I know people who, you know, they tap on the glass and they hope the goldfish ignores them and they feel bad. My gosh. But, you know, 100 years ago, we may not have put the goldfish in a place. Might have left them alone and let them just swim where they swim. It makes you wonder whether your rejection radar is working at all. If you suspect you're not getting honest feedback, you'll be more sensitive to all the possible slights or acceptances. So in one of those communities where people are all loving, you know, like a classic yoga community or, you know, very sensitivity training, Oh, how wonderful. Yes, you're wonderful. Yes, you're fabulous. Yes, you're wonderful. Yes, you're fantastic. Yes, I praise the earth that delivered you on this planet so you could bring me this glass of water today, kind of people. That's kind of nice, but the trouble is, if you're in that group and you don't get invited to lunch that day, you feel very, very rejected because you are so dependent on the acceptance of everybody around you. We live in a world where there's rejection and acceptance. And rejection is not annihilatory, but it feels it. Remember, you're going to have a DNA that's going to come out and get you. A couple of other people have done some studies that were very interesting about it, about this, and they kind of get down to the fact that one guy, Downey, was particularly, had discovered that just as we have a nervous system that makes us reflexively recoil in self-protection when we spot a snake, we also have a defense system that tries to protect us from rejection, automatically triggered by the merest hint of rebuff. It throws our body into physiologic alarm mode, riveting our attention on the need to do something fast and urging us. Now, the amazing thing is we've seen the chemistry of this through imaging. And in some recent imaging studies, we find it's the hippocampus, I know, and it's, where is it now? It is in the post. It's in the back of your brain. There is an activity that takes place when it is sensed. When you feel rejection coming, it kind of sets up a little fire going. And it's as bad as anything else. And it shouldn't be. I mean, it's just, you know, somebody doesn't want to do what you're doing. I remember about 20 years ago, 30 years ago, something like that, before you were born, I was playing in I had a little beach house, had a little place at the beach I had rented for a weekend, and there was a little kid who came along, and he wanted to play with me, and he was a boy, and I had a kite, and he played with me, and we enjoyed flying the kite together. And so he was just, you know, he was endless. And I was tired of it. But I just kept on playing because I didn't want to reject him. You know, I didn't want to say I don't want to. So then I asked my friend, I said, what do you say to a child when he wants to play with you and you don't want to play anymore? And my friend said to me, just say, I don't want to play anymore. And I said, okay, I'll try that out. The next day I was playing with the kid and I said, I don't want to play anymore. And the kid said, okay, and walked on. It was my fear that this would be crippling, to be straight and to be honest, that kind of led me to believe that it would be a terrible thing to do. What about your sensitivity to it, my friends? There are certain conditions, there are certain psychological conditions. We're going to ask you to call in about rejection, by the way. We're going to take your calls today. 212-209-2900. In just about 5 minutes, we're going to take it. There are people who are very nervous type of people. Now, this kind of people, they could be called any number of things, but you just got a basic nervous personality. And in your nervous personality, people that seem to be hypersensitive in general seem to be hypersensitive to rejection as well. In fact, nervous people tend to anticipate, recognize, and overreact to real or perceived rejection from others. The sense of rejection is overpowering and consuming to the people who are the most neurotic. You know, the more nervous you are, the more anxious you are, the more reaction you tend to have. And even if it was meant or not meant, the rejection is sensed. Now, to give you an example of this rejection, your child comes home from playing next door with Mrs. Smith or Bobby Smith. And the child comes in and says, oh, I was playing with Bobby Smith and I saw Mrs. Smith and she's great. She made us cookies. And you as a mother feel rejected and angry. And you feel fear too. And you don't want your child playing next door anymore. That's the kind of sensitivity to rejection that you might have, you know. Or if you have a history of job changes, you know, and you continue to get jobs that you find very fulfilling initially. However, he doesn't get direction from his bosses, so eventually he starts doing things. Now, when you're sensitive to other people's rejections, you tend to make the rejections happen. Just think about people who are paranoid. Let's say you're paranoid, and by paranoid I mean you really imagine that people are talking about you and want to hurt you when they are not. So you're paranoid now, and that's a form of nervousness, and there you are thinking that people are thinking bad things about you. And so when you look at people, you look at them out of the corner of your eyes, you know, you're shifty-eyed. What are they saying about me? What are they saying about me? Now, nobody may have been talking about you, but after a while, when people look at you looking out of the corner of your eyes, they start talking to each other and saying, did you notice Bob? He was looking out of the corner of his eyes. And now what you feared was true. They're now talking about you, so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Rejection sensitivity tends to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you begin getting so sensitive to rejection that you start selling your soul, you eventually will be rejected, and it'll just keep deepening and deepening and deepening. How do you get around it? What do you do with it, you know? How do you deal with it? If you're isolated, if you're in your own world, it's very hard. Another form of sensitivity to rejection is called the body-based, the appearance-based rejection. The appearance-based rejection sensitivity describes this as a personality processing system characterized by anxious concerns and expectations about being rejected based on one's physical appearance. So whether you're pretty or you have a pimple on your face, or you have your body's a funny shape, or your hands are too hairy, or whatever it is, you know, you are afraid you're going to get rejected on it. And what happens is that develops into a kind of a dysmorphia. You know, you kind of begin hating your own body because you're afraid of the rejection of it. And in appearance-based rejections lead to real negative outcomes. You know, appearance-based fear of appearance-based rejections, if you have it. Because, you know, there are people out there who are very, by comparisons, they're unattractive. Unattractive meaning you don't have a well-balanced face, because people like symmetry, you know. So your face is not the same on the left as it is on the right. But your brow may be the wrong shape, and your hair could have fallen out. But it doesn't matter. If you've got the personality, people will not reject you. They'll love you anyway. Who's that famous singer that married a really unattractive male singer, right? Who just, you know, he was fine. And it just his personality made him marry one of the most beautiful women around. What? No, it wasn't Seal. Seal's a good-looking man, isn't Seal? Seal's gorgeous, isn't he? I don't know. Anyway, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. How do you deal with rejection? You think you take it a little too seriously? That's our question. 212-209-2900. Rejection. Rejection sensitivity. Meaning that you feel it down to your quick, and that you're so afraid of it that you run your life based on your sensitivity to it, that there is nothing you want. And again, remember that, my friends, this is normal. It's built in. You've almost got to unbuild it in yourself. You don't need so much self-confidence. You just need less self-unconfidence. You know, you just need to be able to cut down on the belief that you're not valuable. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Oh, we're going to take a call in a minute. Let me just take this a step further. Here's some of your questions, some of the things that you might ask. You ask someone in class if you could borrow his or her notes, or you ask somebody if you could borrow something from her. How concerned or anxious would you be if the person would want to not lend you something? Hey, can I borrow your pen? Nope. No, I'd rather you didn't borrow my pen. So now there's a sensitivity. If you say, you could say, my God, this is a rejection of me. Or it could be this person is afraid of germs. Or it could be this person is afraid of losing the pen. You could interpret that any way you want, according to how neurotic you choose to be over asking somebody for something. In fact, if you ask anybody for anything and they don't give it to you, then you're really not asking for it, you're demanding it if you get hurt by the fact that they don't give it to you. You're not saying, would you lend me that pen? You're saying, give me that pen or I'm going to feel bad. When you request something of someone, generally, it's a request. There should be an option. How about this? You ask your parents for help in deciding certain issues, right? And do your parents want to help you? Ask your parents for help in general, right? How do you feel about your parents' perception of you in the life that you lead? You know, are you confident that they think you're doing okay for yourself, or do you think they're doing badly for you? These are underlying factors that sometimes sit under there. You know, the person's relationship with their family, if you grew up with a rejecting, horrible, punishing family, it's very hard to have self-confidence. It's hard to believe that not everybody feels towards you the way your parents did. There are many parents who would practically try to kill their children by treating them so badly. It's hard not to grow up believing that everybody feels that way towards you. Okay, so we will take calls. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there, you're on the air.
209.
Hi, lower your radio, please.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, yes, I just wanted to tell you, it's actually Julia Roberts and Lyle Lovett.
It was Lyle Lovett, right. Lyle Lovett. I mean, you look at Lyle Lovett, right?
Yes.
If I was an asymmetrical guy, if I ever saw one.
Right? Absolutely.
Absolutely, right? But beautiful in his own way.
And I think he caved under the pressure.
What did you say?
I think he caved under the pressure of the media because everyone kept on saying how unattractive he was. And I think that he eventually caved and they broke up.
That's what made them break up, or, you know, because I don't think that Lyle Lovett really cared about how unattractive he was. He was one of these characters who kind of carried himself, but maybe you're right. But what do you think he had going for him before he caved? Quite a personality and quite a great voice, huh?
Absolutely. His personality was everything, I'm sure.
Would you go out with him?
Well, not me personally, because looks would be pretty high up. But the fact is that I'm sure she saw something beautiful in him.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you about looks. What's your name, by the way?
My name is Sahara.
Sahara?
Yes.
Sahara, looks are very important to you because you want to be with somebody who is a good couple for you, because you want to be with somebody who looks good with you?
Not necessarily. Actually, because of the fact that physical attraction is just as important as, physical attraction is just as important as your chemistry or their personality. So you have to actually have both. It's not that one can be absent and it would be acceptable.
No. Wait. You're talking about you, and I think you mean you.
Yes.
You mean to you, Sahara.
Absolutely.
You want a good personality and good looks. And
absolutely.
You wouldn't settle for a good personality with not so good looks.
No.
Why not? I'm curious, and I'm really asking the question, what is it, Sahara? What is it? Is it that you want to look at somebody beautiful, or you want to be seen with somebody beautiful? What is it?
I would believe that because it really doesn't matter what society thinks. I believe that I would have to have that attraction, that physical attraction also.
So you are afraid that if you were with somebody who
yes.
had the emotional and intellectual capacity but didn't have the physical capacity, you might not be turned on to them.
Yes, in order to make a relationship work, you would actually have to have both.
Therefore, the person has to be attractive.
Has to have a great personality.
Has to be a good-looking guy with a great personality. And if it's just not good-looking enough, you say, sorry, great personalities are cheap. Give me that with good looks.
Well, actually, the fact is that some people are just good-looking in their own way. So it's not just like one mold that this person would have to fit.
Like Lyle Lovett.
Yeah, I love it. He's just not, he's not attractive to me, but probably in some way, she probably found him to be attractive.
So have you found that very attractive men and very attractive personalities go well together?
No, but actually what I was saying is that he doesn't have to be very attractive. I would just have to be attracted to him, in addition to loving his personality.
So if you love a personality, it is not good enough. You gotta feel attracted. Tell me the most important characteristic. Does the person have to have a certain body shape? Does he have to have perfect hands? Does he have to have... What's the thing that gets you? What's the thing that you just...
Okay, it actually... I would say that his personality is certainly important, but if it's only his personality that's attractive, then, or that's drawing me to him, he's only a friend type. He would only be my friend.
Okay, but if it were a physical type that you were looking for, what is one physical characteristic that you cannot negotiate on? He must be what? He has to be tall, he has to be short, he has to be what?
He has to have good personal hygiene and have great teeth.
Great teeth.
Yes.
He must have great teeth. That's very important.
Yes, it's very. That is something that is non-negotiable.
Bad teeth? What if he has bad breath and good teeth?
Oh, no, no, no. That's non-negotiable. That means bad personal hygiene.
Okay, so then what if he kisses lousy but he has good teeth?
I would not get to that point at all.
It's a whole mouth thing with you. You know, you would have been good at buying horses, too.
I'm sorry?
You would have been good at buying horses also because, you know, you could check their teeth and make sure the teeth are strong. It tells you more about the horse that way. Everybody's got their own sensitivity, and the guys out there whose teeth are in question, stay away from Sahara, because if you ain't got a pretty smile, she is going to say, yes, I like you as a friend.
And even then, I can't hang out, especially if he has bad breath. Unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to hang out with him too long due to the fact that his breath smells. So even if he's a friend, I wouldn't be able to hang out with him very long if he has any odor whatsoever.
So have you been in love many times?
No, probably never.
Probably never. Yeah, I know. It's the old criteria thing. Well, how old are you now, Sarah?
31.
31, all right. You got time. You're probably trying it out, looking around, asking your friends. Everybody develops this skill one way or another. Sometimes you negotiate the deal. You know, sometimes you settle for a little less.
Yes.
And sometimes you find your heart in a different kind of way. I wish you well.
Thank you very much.
Sure, and thank you for calling in.
Very welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Armand DeMille. So the effect of being rejected because of your teeth. Interesting. Well, I can understand it. You know, I can understand it. If you think about it genetically, Sahara is choosing based on some biological imperative because strong teeth are, you know, a sign of good physical health. And if she were being selective, naturally selective, without even thinking about it, she's picking, like, the strongest mate. You know? Interesting thing. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind. Getting the blues and getting stuck because somebody rejects you, that's kind of a tough thing. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, my friends, we're going to continue with your phone calls at 212-209-2900. Be back with you shortly. Remarkable. Take the A-Train with Dave Brubeck. Mama, dama, 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 dama. One of the great moments in jazz from the Jazz Goes to College album. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you just tuned in, we're listening to Dave Brubeck, and I'm sorry I had to turn it off. I didn't mean to reject him. Reject? Ah, the question of the day, reject. We're talking about rejection, and we're talking about sensitivity to rejection, and some people are more sensitive to rejection than other people. And you just got to think about simple things. I mean, like Sahara was telling us, you know, you could be attracted to her and she could be attracted to you and you don't know why, but she has a sensitivity to teeth and dental hygiene, and then all of a sudden you smile and she says, I'm sorry, I can't be near you. I know some people whose dental hygiene is lapsing. You know, a lot of people have it lapsed because they can't afford it. It's very hard to keep your teeth in order according to standards. But some people make it lapse more than other people because they're just that kind of absent-minded professor types. You know, they have bad breath and they do that and they get rejected and they don't understand why they get rejected. But there are certain types of people that I've noticed who are rejection-proof. They're kind of in your face in such a way that they know they're never going to belong to anything and nobody's ever going to accept them. So they basically work on being rejected all the time. Like, there are people I know who will stand on a street corner and see every attractive person walk by, and they'll say, hey, will you go out with me? Hey, will you go out with me? Hey, will, and you know, 99 out of 100 people will say no, and one person will say yes. So he's not so sensitive to rejection because he knows it's 1 out of 100. But there are other people who stand on a street corner and they do everything possible to get a repugnant or repulsive or negative response from other people. They could either smell a certain way and they don't know it. If you were to ask them about it, they say, oh no, I don't smell bad. No, I wasn't aware of it. They're not aware of the signal they're sending out. But some people are like, they're like skunks or like porcupines. They have a defense layer on the outside of them keeping people away. And they keep you away in such a way that you automatically, you're away from them, so they can't even be sensitive to your rejecting. They reject you long before you reject them by doing something that'll make everybody reject them, so they won't notice ever an individual doing it to them. Armand DeMille here with you with A Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was, I guess, I had a very bad childhood, and I'm sitting here listening to your show right now, looking at all the pictures of people that have died in my life, and I have now a 16-year-old daughter who is a lovely person. She's a beautiful child, intelligent. And all of a sudden, the rejection that I experienced as a child, I suddenly have, you know, almost that she needs to experience what pain is, you know, that her life has been so easy and so breezy, and I've become almost a horror, you know, a sideshow freak. All the anger and rejection that I felt as a child has suddenly, at the age of 55, has resurfaced, and I thought this was gone 30 years ago that I had let it go, but evidently I didn't. And
so it seems to be coming back to you, huh?
It's coming back. And
so I hear two things. Let me ask you a question. What's your first name?
Evelyn.
Evelyn, let me ask you something. I could hear in your voice that there is a medication that you're taking. Could you tell me what the name of the medication is?
Oh, there's several.
Yes.
I haven't been taking them.
But what are the medications?
At this time. He gave me lithium because I've been tending lately to be very bipolar.
I could hear the reason I asked you about
there are days that I cannot sleep for maybe 3 days in a row.
Okay, so
and then weeks where I can't get off the sofa.
Yeah.
So
okay.
He put me on something to try to balance me out, and then something for depression, which doesn't do anything at all. I've been treated for depression for 30 years.
Okay, so Evelyn, let me ask you a question, all right? Now, in addition to that, I could also hear that you probably have some wine or some alcohol that you also do, right?
No, I don't drink. I can't drink at all. Drinking will throw me completely on the floor. I get immediately so drunk I can't.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So what I'm hearing, Evelyn, is, and I'm saying this with all my heart, is that you have a condition. You have a physical, psychiatric, medical condition, and this medical condition is called a bipolar personality. And in this bipolarity, you're stuck in one of those moments of depression where everything turns so bleak. So bleak that you could practically dig a hole through the floor and just crawl into it. And I could hear you're in the middle of it right now. And I hear that people are reaching out and trying to help you, but they feel powerless.
I have tried him so hard to get rid of my husband. I threw all of his clothes in the trash. Yeah. And he said, I don't care what you do to me, I'm not leaving you. It doesn't matter. And even my daughter, I said, I know, she has a father that lives in Virginia, and she's visiting him now. And she's coming home on Monday. And, you know, I'm worried that I'm going to mistreat her, because before she left, I literally ripped her shirt off of her back. I was so angry with her over nothing. And, you know, she smart-mouthed me. And
but you're not in that, you're not in that condition anymore. You're in a different kind of a slide. Evelyn, I would strongly suggest, if your daughter is coming home on Monday, that you get your medication rebalanced somehow. If you need to talk to somebody else, find a way.
I have all the prescriptions. I have everything. It just, I haven't been taking them.
I know, and you've been waiting.
Because of the fact that my sleep pattern is so off.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know when to take it anymore. I mean, it's like...
Well, who's your shrink? I mean, you got somebody you could call
and ask? Yes, I have.
Okay, and I know it takes a lot of effort, but I want you or your husband to call and ask and get you the kind of information you need so you can get yourself stabilized now. You're in a terrible place. It's a horrible feeling place. I'm real familiar with it. But, you know, you got a loving family, and when you have a husband... who you could throw his clothes in the trash, and he turns around and he says to you, I don't care what you do, I'm never leaving you. Then that means you got an awful good soul and somebody recognizes it.
Yeah, you know, I would do anything for anybody. I would give the shirt for my back, and even my daughter says to me, Mommy, you're too good to people. They take advantage of you. Why do you do that?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's maybe because of my own inadequacies, the feeling, you know, that I want to be accepted, that I've always been a very giving person. And like you said, with the appearance business,
Evelyn,
was her age, you know, appearance became an obsession with me.
Okay,
you know?
Evelyn, before we get too much further into it, the first step is not to understand why, but to understand what and to get it in order. You have a way of getting it in order. Get your husband working with you. Get yourself to where you could bring your body in order, because I'm not going to be able to, through a conversation on the radio, lift your depression.
No,
I can just inspire you and tell you I care and I understand.
I know.
Okay? And thank you so much for calling in, too, Evelyn.
Thank you for being on the radio.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Many of you can't imagine what it's like to live with depression at that level. It's horrible, and it does take away your own tools. You know, you don't have the tools. You know, here's the medication I'm supposed to be taking, but I can't reach my hand to take it. Now, there are other solutions than medication, but in a condition like Evelyn's, which I recognized just from her talking, you know, from the first few words, she wants to be able to get herself somewhat in order before she could really approach solving the way her mind is. And she must be a very generous person, because a lot of people love her a lot. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Armand. This is Danny, and I'm so glad I got through to you, because I'm a long-time listener and a first-time caller.
Hey, Danny, welcome to WBAI.
And I have met you once briefly, and I want to really thank you for the work you do, because you have helped me immensely. And before I say something about myself, I would like to really empathize with this woman, and she, or you, Evelyn, sound very much like my mother.
Mm.
So there are things you can do, and I would like to suggest to you to read Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, and the newest one, I think it's called New Earth.
Did your mother read those?
I beg your pardon?
Did your mother read those?
No, she didn't.
Okay, so here's the problem with the suggestion, Donnie.
Okay.
Donnie, when you've got that kind of depression, no book is possible. You can't even pick it up. So even though it seems like from your side, oh boy, if she just read Eckhart Tolle, she'd be better. By the time she got the book, she'd be better. You know what I mean? There are certain conditions, psychiatric conditions, that are so severe you can't even see two words in front of each other. So reading a book as a suggestion sounds like a nice suggestion, but it's like it's for the wrong person.
I understand that very well because it took me a long time to read it. I had it for a year before I read it.
That's right. And by then you were...
Anything that could, you know, like, motivate a person to pick it up would be a good thing.
Yeah. Good. So your life goes well now?
Oh, yes. I mean, talking about rejection, I have gone through excruciating experience being rejected by my husband because of the porn addiction, which I accidentally learned about. And I gave him a reasonable option to go for counseling and therapy. We actually do have a pending conversation with you, but he never was willing to come. So he chose to live that world, and he actually bought a webcam. So now it was painful, but it helped me come back to me and my true essence. And as Kokai says, you know, a spiritual being with a human experience.
Yeah, let me ask you
something. It's all about the pain and learning from pain and growing to a point when you can start learning from a joy.
What's he doing with the webcam?
I don't know. That's his life. That's what he does. He lives with millions of people on the internet.
So he's actually making porn. He got himself fully involved.
No. He's not making porn. He's just participating in it.
I understand. Well, for you, glad you were able to step out of it and step away from it so you don't have to be involved in it, you know?
Yes.
I feel sorry for him and his compulsion, you know, how stuck he is and where he is.
Well, I understand it's illness, and I...
It is illness.
I still love him, but there is no future because I do think that there is better for me.
Did you ever send him the book by Eckhart Tolle?
Yes, I had him read even all the books you have suggested. He read a chapter. I forgot the author of the book on brain, where there is a whole chapter on pornography. He just stayed silent for a while. And
so you see what the idea is when
it's
you...
It's beyond him. He can't change it.
Yeah, when you try to give people books as answers, it generally doesn't work. By the time a book has meaning to somebody, they already don't need it. You know what I mean? They're already,
you're right.
At that point. Thank you for calling in, Danny. Nice to
all
speak
right.
with you again. Anytime
all
I can
best,
be of help.
All the love to everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Be strong.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. My thing about rejection is my mother. My mother had tuberculosis when I was about a year old. And, she, you know, back then they used to send you to the sanitarium for a couple of years. And during the time she was in the sanitarium, she had a child. And that was her secret all these years. And she didn't tell us until I was about 40 years old. Now, at the time, she told the brother that I was raised with and myself. But she told me when I was little and she forgot. So I asked her at the time that she announced it to us. I said, well, because she had a boyfriend at the time. I said, well, do you want us to help you tell him? Oh, I'll tell him in my time. I'll tell him. And the time went by. A few years have gone by. Now the man has passed. And there's still relatives that don't even know. And she is so caught up. And I refuse to play the game. If some of her friends are around and my brother, you know, happens to call, she's going to get her feelings hurt. That's what's going to happen. But I told her, I said, if you're friends, they're not going to judge you. They're not going to care. They're not going to reject you. But she can't get through that.
Yeah, so what does she need from you?
I mean,
there you are, a teacher. You're a teacher. You're trying to teach your mother how to be, right?
Uh-huh.
Trying to give her advice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you would imagine, oh, if we just... What's your name, by the way?
Tony,
so if we just had the advice, people just followed our advice, everybody would be fine. But the advice doesn't touch her.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time you said to your mom, you know, Mom, you've lived a tortured life with a lot of secrets, and I want you to know I have great respect for you and love for you, and I may not be able to solve any of your problems, but I'll be for you right to the end.
No, I've never thought to say that to her. I'll tell you what I did feel.
Well, let me ask you something. When you think of saying that to her now,
uh-huh.
How does it touch you?
it feels like it's a good place to be with her, that maybe it will touch her in a way that's good.
And how does it touch you? Because the advice doesn't get you anywhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may as well tell her to read a book by Eckhart Tolle. You know, I mean it. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
it's like, you know, people just want to be accepted for where they are at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you say to her, here, Mom, I'm with you. It just makes you feel so much better knowing you're not alone on the planet.
Okay.
And that's the beginning. That's the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the most important part. And with that part, you know, you, other than that, and with every time somebody gives somebody advice, it's a form of rejection. You know, it's like saying to somebody, I don't like you the way you are, read this book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like you the way you are, listen to this music. You know?
Mm-hmm. You know what, it makes sense because my own pain kind of comes through at being, because she wasn't married to, she had three children by three different men she wasn't married to, and I felt her embarrassment over it when I was a child, and I haven't forgotten that. So... certain patterns of her behavior make me go back to that childhood space where I would get angry, like, come on, I didn't ask to be born. Then you did it. Get over it.
I understand. Tony, you're a precious person. I thank you very much for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you sound like somebody who's a real sensitive being, and I'm pleased to have you as part of our world.
Well, thank you.
Okay, nice to talk to you.
Okay.
212-209-2900. Time for one more quick call. Hi there, you're on the air. We might have time for one more quick call. Hi there, you're on the air. No, I guess we don't have time for one more quick call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I feel rejected by my husband. I've been married now for 8 years, and my husband is constantly... avoiding the home. He's absent. He's hanging out with his friends. And it's gotten to a point where I truly feel rejected. Everything else becomes first priority other than his family and myself.
Yeah, so you two don't have a way of really talking to each other about what the issues are.
You know, cannot talk.
Yeah, you cannot talk. What country are you from?
I am from the islands. I am from Trinidad.
Yeah, from Trinidad. And not a place where people know how to talk directly about emotions, you know, and about what they really feel. Maybe it's time you and your husband got together and spoke to somebody and you said to him, look, our marriage is going downhill fast. Let's meet with somebody. I know a guy who would be great for you two to talk to.
I've had him listen to your program.
But not listen to my program. Actually, the two of you go meet with a man. I have a man, Alan White, who would be perfect.
I would love to.
You know, but
I don't think he would go.
Ask him. Tell him, look, our relationship is headed so bad, we got to do something about it. And if you don't think we do, you know, then you're not taking it very seriously. Then you know what you do? Then you go yourself to see a counselor. You will build the muscle. You'll straighten out this relationship. You don't have to live this way, I promise.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you.
Sure. Armando, we have to be going. I'm sorry, we're running out of time. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more of this fantastic stuff.